Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
Just before we start, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners on this land we are broadcasting from. I also would like to pay my respects to our elders and also our elders of more recent arrival. Thank you for tuning in to Let's Talk this morning. This is the first day we're back for Let's Talk of for the year, and it's a big week for us. Come Saturday, the 26th of January, which is Invasion Day for our mob. My first guest on the program for the year is none other than, you know, an elder that's been on the front line since the 70s, the establishment of the 10 Embassy, the establishment of organizations that we, you know, have around the country. You know, was there in the days of when the Aboriginal flag was first flown, was there in 1988. My guest is, yes, Gary Foley. Just before we start, Gary, could I get you to tell us your name, your mob, and where you're from, please?
Yeah, I'm from the Goombangia mob on the north coast of New South Wales, beautiful Nambucca Heads. Don't call me an elder, I'm not that old yet, and don't call me uncle.
Okay. I thought so, so I held back from both of those.
No worries.
I guess to our people, you know, you've been, you know, when it comes to the history, when it comes to the political struggle and also the advancement for Aboriginal people, you've been in and around, you know, these significant organisations and these individuals that help set up, you know, the things that we sort of take for granted today as younger Aboriginal people. I guess what was it like for yourself growing up in the 60s and the 70s as a young black person in New South Wales?
Well, I actually grew up in the 50s and 60s rather than the 70s. I politically grew up in the 70s. Mm-hmm. But, well, you know, I grew up under the old Protection Board, Dave, or, you know, the old Welfare Board in New South Wales, where Aboriginal people were systematically denied their basic human rights. I'm one of the many of my generation who had their educational opportunities limited because we were Aboriginal and growing up in that era. You know, when you think about it, the first Aboriginal person to graduate from an Australian university was a Goombangia woman. In fact, Margaret Williams from the north coast of New South Wales, who graduated from Melbourne Uni in 1958. And yet the first Indigenous people or Aboriginal people in other parts of the world, in Canada, America and New Zealand, graduated 100 years before that, which is sort of evidence of the extent to which Aboriginal people were still being systematically denied their educational opportunities more than halfway through the 20th century. So it was tough, and you know, but a lot of people got through it. It was a harder struggle then, but there were a lot more people long before me who were fighting a good fight and resisting the ongoing racism and oppression and exploitation of Aboriginal people.
Well, I guess just on that note as well, I wanted to get you on the program, obviously, to give us a history lesson about the struggle and the resistance of our people. You are a historian down there in Victoria. You teach at university. You have Koori History Web, which is a really, really good archive of Aboriginal history, and in particular from the late 1800s all the way up till now. You know, you've archived this. What I wanted to also get you to talk about is, I guess, two significant dates throughout our time as Aboriginal people: 1988 bicentennial, and then also 1938, the Day of Mourning. I'll get you to start with the first one, if you could, please, and the significance of the Day of Mourning in 1938 on the 26th of January down at Sydney Hall.
Well, the history that I teach places the really significant beginning of the modern-day Aboriginal political resistance around 1924, mm-hmm. when the first modern Aboriginal political organisation was established by Aboriginal followers of Marcus Garvey and the teachings of Marcus Garvey about independence and resistance, black resistance and black consciousness. And that organisation, the Australian Aboriginal Progressive Association, set up in the 1920s in northern New South Wales by Fred Maynard, the grandfather of John Maynard, the historian at the University of Newcastle. My great-grandfather was involved in that organisation. And that was the forerunner, if you like, of probably most of the Aboriginal political organisations that emerged during the 20th century. And the two organisations that were involved in setting up or creating or organising the 1938 Day of Mourning was the Aboriginal Progressive Association of New South Wales, led by Jack Patton, Bill Ferguson, Pearl Gibbs and people like that, which was a follow-on from the earlier 1920s Australian Aborigines Progressive Association. Also, William Cooper and the Australian Aborigines League, people like Bill Onus, Doug Nicholls, Marge Tucker from Victoria or from south of the border in New South Wales, were involved in that organisation. And those two organisations joined forces in 1938 to hold a protest against the 150th anniversary of the arrival of the British in Sydney. William Cooper deemed that day a day of mourning. They declared it that there was no reason why Aboriginal people should celebrate on that occasion, 150th anniversary. And the active resistance or the active campaigning against Invasion Day really begins on that day, 26th of January 1938. Many right-wing commentators in Australia, like Andrew Bolton, John Howard and others, have got the temerity and ignorance to suggest that Aborigines have only recently started campaigning against the Day of Mourning. That's not true. It's been going on since 1938, or if you like, it's been going on since 1778. But 1938 was a really significant moment in the history of the Aboriginal political struggle. Then 50 years later, in 1988, Aboriginal people determined nationally to oppose the bicentennial celebrations that were to be held. Part of the reason for the intensity of the protests that year was the sellout by the Hawke government, the Hawke Labor government, who had come to power in 1983, declaring that they were going to grant national or create national uniform land rights legislation. But under pressure from the mining industry and pastoral industry, the Hawke Labor government backed off at a million miles an hour. And as a consequence, Aboriginal groups all over Australia decided to protest on the 26th of January 1988. And that led to the biggest assembly of Aboriginal people in Australia in the 80 or 90,000 year history of Australia, when a huge gathering marched down the main street, George Street in Sydney, into Hyde Park, and held a huge rally, peaceful rally. You know, there'd been a lot of suggestions by right-wing commentators again that it was going to be a violent sort of confrontation, but Aboriginal people gathered in a peaceful way, in a dignified way, and made their point very powerfully against both the Invasion Day celebrations that were being held on Sydney Harbour and against the Hawke government itself. And just on that point, people should always remember, if you look at the detail of Australian history, especially in the last 70 years or so, those governments that have probably done more damage to the interests of Aboriginal people and to Aboriginal peoples themselves have in fact been Labor governments, you know, governments that have presented themselves or pretended that they were progressive compared to the Conservatives. When you actually look at the history, things appear quite different. You know, the Hawke government came to power making all sorts of promises about land rights, freehold title, and national uniform legislation that would enable Aboriginal people to gain land and create opportunities for themselves to develop their own economic and political independence. Within 6 months, they'd backed off at a million miles an hour, and we ended up with this Mickey Mouse thing called native title. You know, people should remember that native title is not land rights, and reconciliation is not justice. And we got both of those stupid ideas from our Hawke cheating Labor government.
And you're listening to Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM. We're going to head to a quick song break. Going to play We Have Survived by No Fixed Address.
This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
And you're back on Let's Talk. I'm your host, Bo Spearham, and my guest is Gary Foley, historian and activist. And that was We Have Survived by No Fixed Address. Really, really deadly song that talks about the history of our people. There's been lots of talk around Change the Day to Abolish Australia Day and massive numbers support of Aboriginal people and, I guess, you know, the treatment over the last few hundred years. I guess your feelings on the last few years and on these massive numbers that are starting to come out.
Well, after the huge actions and the very effective political actions that occurred during my generation of political actions, late 60s, early 70s, the Aboriginal Embassy, the most successful Aboriginal political action in the 20th century. People of my generation, my political generation, were probably a little bit disappointed about the follow-on from that and what occurred after that. I mean, it seemed to us that the generation that followed us took advantage of a lot of the opportunities that we created and became more assimilated within the government system, which is what governments wanted them to do. And, you know, many of the organisations that exist today are government approved, if you like, in the sense that governments are quite happy with the way in which they operate because they operate within terms and conditions that governments set. So it's been really gratifying in the last few years for people of my generation to see yet another new generation emerge, a new generation of political activists who are probably the grandchildren of my generation. People like the Warriors of the Aboriginal Resistance, who last year in Melbourne managed to pull 60,000 people onto the streets of Melbourne. Now that's a pretty spectacular an amazing feat, and I was really, really impressed. And I'm hoping they're going to do a similar thing, or hopefully even get greater numbers out this year. And I've got great respect and admiration for this new younger generation. And if you think about it, this new younger generation is doing what my generation did after the 1967 referendum. Really didn't bring about the changes that the older generation had promised us then. The younger generation, my generation, chose to reject the tactics and strategies of the older generation and seek to find our own analysis, find our own path towards what we thought might change things. And I see the younger generation now essentially rejecting the tactics and strategies of the generations before them, including my generation. And I think that's really important. I think that each new generation of young Aboriginal political activists need to conduct their own analysis. They grow up in a different time to the times that my generation did. They have different social, political and educational experiences to what my generation had. They live in a world that is radically different to the world that I grew up in. And so therefore it's only logical that they need to analyse and construct their own tactics and strategies that are suited to whatever the situation is today. And that's what I see these young people, including members of the war, doing. And I think that the proof's in the pudding. Last year in Melbourne, like I said, 60,000 people marched on the streets. That means these young people have been effective, and that's great. And that's really important. In terms of whether we change the date or not, I'm inclined to agree with Luke Pearson's piece in Indigenous X. He's decided that he doesn't agree with change the date anymore. What he thinks is important is change Australia. And I think that that's in line with what we were saying back in the 60s. I think that's what's in line with what was being said by the activists of the 50s and 60s. I think that's what's in line with what Aboriginal activists have been saying ever since the first modern Aboriginal political organisation in the 1920s. I mean, it's Australia that needs to change, not the Mickey Mouse token date on which they want to, you know, go out and express their big orgy of nationalism. I mean, Australia itself needs to fundamentally look at itself in the mirror, create a greater understanding of its own history. Most Australians got no knowledge of their own history whatsoever. I know that because I teach young white kids their own history at the university, and it's incredible how little young Australians coming out of high school today still don't know about their own history. But by gee, when I finish with them, they certainly do. And they have a different attitude once they have an understanding of what has occurred in Australia. And once they've got an understanding that it's not their fault unless they sit on their asses and do nothing. And that's what I encourage them to think. I encourage them to understand their own history and realise that they have a role to play in changing the sort of Australia that exists now and creating a better place, not just for our grandkids, but for their grandkids as well.
You just pretty much answered one of my questions I was going to ask next, is the messaging, I guess, has the message changed throughout like those three significant dates, but then also those three different dates as well, and to now, how significant is it and how important is it to remember and teach and sort of just practice the history that has been?
Well, I think it's, the good thing about this new younger generation is that they realise that things really haven't changed that much since my time. I mean, if you look at the political, socioeconomic circumstances of Aboriginal Australia today, in many ways things are far worse than they were in the day when I got the fire in my belly, when my generation stood up and fought. You know, there are a greater number of Aboriginal people incarcerated in the prisons around Australia today than there ever were during my time. And, you know, even the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody, which was set up to look at deaths in custody, that's one of the major findings of that, was that the reason so many Aboriginal people were dying in jail 25, 30 years ago was because there were so many Aboriginal people in jail 30 years ago. The recommendations of the Royal Commission were supposed to be designed to prevent Aboriginal people going to jail at the rates that they were. The Royal Commission found that the reason Aboriginal people were going to jail at the rates they were weren't because of any greater criminality on the part of Aboriginal people, but more because of the built-in embedded racism within the Australian criminal justice system. And those recommendations were created to try and address those issues of racism within the system. And yet here we are, 25, 30 years down the track, there are more Aboriginal people in jail today than there were at the time of the Royal Commission. Now, that ought to be a concern for all Aboriginal people and all Australians. You know, the Aboriginal people in Australia are just about the most incarcerated people on earth, for crying out loud. And if that isn't an indication that there is something deeply wrong within the Australian community, within the Australian society, then God knows what else is. And like I say, things generally, whilst, you know, there's more Aboriginal people going to uni today than there ever was, we've got more Aboriginal lawyers than we ever had, we've got more Aboriginal people in jail than there's ever been, you know? So there's a bit of a contradiction there in what's going on. And things are worse than they were in my day. So there's still a need for people to stand up and fight, and fight for Aboriginal values, not the imposed values of assimilation, which seem to be so popular today amongst so many of our pseudo leaders. You know, the assimilation project is far more advanced today than it ever was during the era of assimilation. And all I'm saying in all of that is that there's a lot of food for thought for those people who think that they're Aboriginal thinkers rather than the drinkers.
We're going to head to a quick song and we'll be back after that.
Don't sing me an anthem because you don't know the words. Words are hard to remember when they mean nothing at all to the heart who's still waiting for their voice to be heard. Don't sing me your anthem when your anthem's absurd.
Sing me your anthem till we've learned how to share.
to be heard. Don't sing me your anthem when your anthem's absurd. Don't sing me your anthem when your anthem's absurd. Don't sing me your anthem when your anthem's absurd. Don't sing me your anthem.
Let's Talk.
And you're back on Let's Talk. I'm your host, Bo Spearham, and my guest is Gary Foley, historian and activist. Been around for quite some time and has given our people so much as well. Like I said, he's a historian. He has a couple of great websites, which I'll ask him at the end of the program to let us know those, so you can go check out that. Check those websites out. The way that newer generations sort of access history, knowledge has vastly changed to your time. What was sort of, I guess, your motivation? How did you sort of seek that knowledge back in your day? And then also, I guess, just in wrapping up as well, because I know you got to go, any inspiring words for younger people or anybody that should go and attend their local Invasion Day march?
Look at the work being done by the young activists of today. I have great admiration for them. I have great admiration for the warriors of Aboriginal resistance. I have great admiration for anyone who sees that there is a problem and that they need to be part of the solution rather than being part of the problem. In my day, I had a lot of really great people who were great inspiration to me. People like Bill Onus, I was inspired by Jack Patton, even though I never met the man, I knew about him. Pearl Gibbs was still alive when I was young. Marge Tucker was a great inspiration to listen to her stories about the struggle in the 30s and 40s. Chica Dixon was one of my greatest mentors and role models, if you like. And when I moved to Victoria, Bruce McGuinness was one of the greatest Aboriginal thinkers. And, I always describe Bruce McGuinness as the godfather of the Black Power movement. And the Black Power movement was the thing that brought about so much change in the late 60s and early 70s. The Aboriginal Embassy remains, the Aboriginal Embassy in 1972 remains the most effective Aboriginal political action of the last 100 years or more. You know, and the reason it was so effective was because we were non-compromising. Mm. We didn't negotiate with government. We made demands and forced the government to the negotiating table. These days, too many pseudo leaders are prepared to compromise and accept negotiations on government's terms. And what's that achieved? We've ended up with native title, a Mickey Mouse concept that gives nothing to Aboriginal people. Native title is not land rights. When we were talking about land rights in the 70s, we were talking about ownership of land, not some bullshit partial interest in land that was effectively meaningless. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of work to be done. Young people need to realise that, you know, the as they say in French, la lutte continue, the struggle goes on. And there's a long way to go. I don't expect to see justice achieved by Aboriginal people in my lifetime. I'd like to think it was possible, but I think there's a couple more generations yet of fighting to go to ensure that we don't get wiped out as a people. Because if the assimilation project proceeds at the pace that it is today, in 50 years' time, there will be no Aboriginal people. There'll be a bunch of brown people running around, calling themselves Aboriginal people, but they'll be imbued with white man's values and cultural ideas. So there. Okay, folks.
Thanks for that there. We'll have to get you back on sometime later through the year. Also, really quickly, what's your website? How can people find your website?
I've got two websites at the moment now, and yep. The third one coming. The main, the old one is CurryWeb, www.curry, KWORIWEB.org, O-R-G. And I've got the newer one that I've developed is GuriWeb. go in line with me being a Gumbanja man, a Guri.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Guri, not a Kuri, but yeah. it's www.gworiweb.org. And I've just finished a major archive project at Victoria University, which will go online later this year. It's a huge 750,000 item digital archive that has just been created on a big project between seven universities I work with based on material I've collected over the last 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be online. I'll let people know further down the track what the how to access that. It's primarily a huge educational resource to counter the nonsensical stuff that is taught about Australian history in high schools and universities today.
Mm-hmm.
So, thank you, folks. Nice talking to you.